This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff, and as always, joined by my teammates, Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, and our digital content producer, Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss our bold predictions. Rob Schaefer thought it would be a good idea for us to go back and look at our predictions from the beginning of the season and see how poorly we fared. Also, the Andre Drummond rumors and how that might affect the Bulls going forward. Zach LaVine in his first All-Star game and that experience and what the All-Star week and weekend has meant to us in the past and some other things as well.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness, and packaged cold for peak refreshment, because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Brad, just whenever, is Brad going to be on these with us normally, Tony?
Yes.
Okay, so Brad, as soon as we jump in, just hit record this way, that anything that we say can and will be used against us up until the next.
Well, I think Brad is the biggest Bulls Talk podcast listener we've got out there. So I think you know the vibes, right, Brad?
I could join in if I had to, maybe.
Oh, there it is.
Brad's got takes.
Brad. Yeah, the family is expanding. You know, this is what it's supposed to be. All right, so apparently we're supposed to be looking our finest, and I will say this, I was rushing around, so this is what you might catch me in running around the city. Thank you so much for listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. We are here for our the guys and girls who strangely might want to see us. You have the always lovely Rob Schaefer, and oh, look at that, a gentleman, a resplendent gentleman, Casey Johnson. Tony Gill is with us, our digital content producer as well, and I'm Jason Goff. So, fellas, we are getting ready to come upon the little All-Star week or break that we didn't know what was going to happen, and you know things are I don't know how to say this, but like in the last week or so, just basketball, the country, like I don't know if it's just me, there's a different vibe and a different feel. And when I heard about the All-Star game, I was like, nah, this doesn't seem like a really good idea. Doesn't still seem like a good idea, but there's kind of a weightlessness to this All-Star week as opposed to last year. As Bulls fans knew, it was bitter cold, right? And it was a great time and a showcase for the city, but it wasn't the best look for the Chicago Bulls as a franchise. And here we are a year later talking about the same things, but in different contexts. Zach LaVine is an all-star. This team is playing a lot better than they played last year. And to make fun of some of those things that we thought would happen, wouldn't happen, Rob Schaefer, who always comes up with the good ideas on this pod, he thought it would be cool to go back and laugh at how wrong we were and how right he was. And he'd like to disguise it in a bold prediction kind of vibe. So, Rob, we can start there and take it away, because I know this is going to be a tough one for me because I remember what I said.
Yeah, so one of my ideas at the beginning of the season was for the three of us, and Tony Gill is at, he wants to hide in the corners of this Zoom room out of sight for this podcast, but the four of us submitted Bulls predictions. We put them in print. They're not in audio form. So they are written. They're up on NBCSportsChicago.com. If you Google, you know, Bulls predictions for the 2020-21 season, Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, Jason Goff. I came up with the questions. So I had the framing and everything like that. They're not all predictions exactly. They're kind of just our take from preseason. This was back sometime in mid-December during training camp. So yeah, let's just like run down the list. Yeah. I mean, the first thing you hit on it at the All-Star break, and this was something we talked to Billy Donovan about last night. The Bulls enter this break 16-18, which I think if you had told me or any of us on this podcast that they'd be 16-18, basically at the halfway point of the season, we'd be surprised. Billy Donovan was asked that last night. If he would have been surprised preseason to hear that, he basically did the Billy Donovan thing where he said, well, it's still a losing record. We're not satisfied with it. We still got a long way to go, which is true. And I'm sure the fans appreciate that. But let's take a look. So that Casey wrote this last night. What's that, Casey? 16 and 18 is on pace for 32 wins? 34? 34 in a 72-game season. So Jason had them pegged for 29 and 43 during the preseason. Casey had 27 and 45. And Tony and I both had 28 and 44. So we were a little less pessimistic. We had them in the high 20s. You know, they still could land there. The second half slate is tough. But right now they are on pace to exceed that expectation. I think, you know, if you had told – really, if you had told me that they would be this close to 500 this late into the season and in the playoff hunt the way that they are, I would have been surprised. But, you know, it's a pleasant surprise, I suppose. What do you guys think? Do you think they're on – it seems like they're pretty comfortably on their way to eclipse the 30-win mark and be in the thick of this until the end. But I guess anything could happen the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it is a pretty difficult schedule. You know, I know a lot of teams are going to be going through it, but you know, it's got a lot of good opponents, and there are a lot of games in a short amount of time. Now, in theory, they're going to get more whole with Lowry almost certainly coming back, and then Otto possibly coming back, and then you know, Chandler Hutchinson's status is probably a little more nebulous, if not, you know, long termish. So, you know, Lowry certainly in theory will help. So that's a pro a check on the pro mark. But it's a tough schedule. So I do think I'm going to be wrong with 27. I'm not sure if 34 is going to be right either. So we'll see where that's why they play the games where it comes out. But I'm just glad I was most pessimistic with that.
You take the crown, Casey. No, I mean, listen, I think this speaks to what last year really wasn't. And we've talked about it on this pod. Last year was a year where we were supposed to find some things out, and then you get on the precipice of having to pay people. That was a whole year where you didn't find anything out about this team. So now, you know, and I know it's going to sound awful, but like the KC in me thinks like, man, what if they would have been doing this last year? Where would we be at this year? Right. On and still on the precipice of guys having to be paid, whether it be Zach or Lowry or, you know, the next contracts that are up, Wendell in a couple of years. So right now I'm looking at it as this has been cool. This has been entertaining. This has been exactly what we would have hoped for in an ascending team. And on top of it, it speaks to and you know, sometimes I feel a little small townish about it. And then sometimes I just say, hey, it is what it is. Like, it speaks to how good Zach LaVine has been this year. And, you know, we've seen championships. We got to throw all the disclaimers out there. We've seen the greatest player of all time. We've seen the, you know, the greatest sidekick of all time. We've seen the greatest coach of all time. Yes, that is the measuring stick that nobody's going to be able to live up to. But if you look at the current NBA ecosphere and players who take jumps, you know, Zach LaVine is being considered around the nation as a guy who's taking that next step, that next tier jump. And it's evident. Like, you could have told me that Zach was going to score 26 a game, 27 a game. And I'm like, yeah, he's that dude. He can score. But you would never been able to tell me that this dude would shoot 50% from the field and 40-plus percent from three. And he's doing it regularly now. Sometimes you can see guys, like, kind of manicuring their way through, okay, I'm not going to take that shot because that might not be as high percentage of shot. Guys keep those numbers in their head, right? He's going out there, and there's a lot of 13 for 20s, right? There's a lot of 9 for 16s. These aren't ones where he's scraping by with 50%. And, yeah, he'll have his off games, but the refinement of Zach LaVine and now the next level, cutting down the turnovers, becoming a better defender, I think that speaks to those wins. Those 16 wins could have easily been 9 or 10 the way they were last year, but the refinement of him, I think he can't say it enough how important he's been to this first half of this season.
And Arturis Karnišovas agrees with you, because when he was asked about Zach at his midseason press conference a couple days ago, he mentioned, not, you know, it's beyond the 29-5-5, which is gaudy and amazing. He said it's really the way that he's impacting winning on a night-to-night basis. You see the impact. He's at the center of an offense right now that is around league average, whereas it had been, you know, bottom two, bottom three for the last 3 years of the Zach LaVine tenure in Chicago. So it's all kind of come together in a team context. Arturis said that before the year. He said it as diplomatically as he could, but he basically said, you know, during, I think it was media week, he said, Zach is an incredible, incredible individual talent, but it needs to happen in a team context. And I took that as a challenge, you know, when he said that in the moment, and, you know, to see the path from that opinion to what he said about him, when he spoke to us earlier this week, really charts that progress. So They're exceeding our expectations there. It's a lot of these predictions, again, like you said, Jason, it speaks to the taste that last season left, especially given how high the vibes were going into last season, right? Like last year was supposed to be the breakthrough year. You don't want to get ahead of your skis coming into this year. You want to be hesitant. You want to be cautious. You want to see it before you believe it. So our next prediction was, do they make the playoffs? Do the Bulls make the playoffs? Do they make it through the play-in round? We all said no to that. That's not worth, you know, dwelling on too much. That and right now, going into the All-Star break, they're sitting 10th in a pretty crowded Eastern Conference. I think they can.
AC promised me 6th.
No, right? I said 6th, 7th, or 8th.
6th, 7th, or 8th. I heard 6th. So, you know, if KC promised 6th, 7th, or 8th, I'm not going to play these play-in games and all these machinations that you want to get into, Rob. They are supposed to be a playoff team in this Eastern Conference this year because the Eastern Conference is ridiculous right now.
Two quick things. The fact that I've already waffled from my preseason prediction to a prediction on the pod shows you should put no credence into what I say, number one. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll talk about that. And number two, Rob, you say it's a reaction to the last three seasons. I'm going to say a couple things real quick about that. It's also a reaction to the fact that the roster is the same. It's exactly the same. I mean, except for obviously the two minor tweaks, I guess you could call one of them significant with the Patrick Williams addition. And then from my perspective, there might be a little PTSD from the Ron Mercer era, but go on to your next one.
Shout out to Ron, you know, shout out to Ron. One of the first people I got a chance to cover, one of the first people I've ever seen after a loss in the first game of the season, go right to the box score and said, I got mine. And I'm like, you know what? That is an NBA player that I can admire right there. So shout out to Ron. But yeah, and by the way, we can shout out to Billy Donovan, right? Like this this thing feels different, looks different, acts different, smells different, tastes different because they have a coach, right? And Jim Boylan is a respected assistant around this league. The Trailblazers brought him in to be the defensive consultant. But whatever that was last year and the last couple of years, just didn't work. It didn't work. And the results are evident. And the people who don't have jobs anymore because of it are evident. So we get like, I think sometimes we like to dance around a little bit. It's Billy Donovan. Like Billy Donovan is talking to these dudes like professional players that he is trying to develop. But also when a new coach comes in, then you got to have the first date face on. You can't move around Billy Donovan the way you did around Jim Boylan. And if you do, you're going to find yourself on the bench or out of the rotation because he's playing 10, 11 guys. So, you know, shout out to circumstances and more importantly, Billy Donovan as well.
100%. And he's adopted, you know, a challenging coaching style, but it's resonating again, because like you said, the messenger and the way that it's being conveyed and the way that it's translating. I mean, the resonance is a product of the results. It all kind of feeds into each other. So that's actually a decent segue to our most improvable selections, which we've litigated on this podcast over the last few episodes. And I think it's pretty safely Zach LaVine at this point when you talk about the jump from, you know, being on the fringe of being a star player to being an all-star. We've talked about that. I think he's pretty clearly, for all of the developments that he's made in his game, the most improved Bull to this point in the season. Jason, Casey, and Tony all agreed on Coby White as a potential to be the most improved Bull this season. I said Wendell Carter Jr. So I'll give you guys the floor first to talk Coby and kind of what you've seen from him. I think, you know, there are certainly, you know, embracing that starting point guard role. There have been places where he's taken steps and there are times when it's been up and down. Mm-hmm. So what have you guys seen from him in the context of his improvements from year one to year two?
Well, I mean, I always say like, we shouldn't hate on Coby for him being forced into a role that he's not equipped to play. So right. It's like, you know, I don't think I've said it ad nauseum on this podcast. I don't think he's a point guard, but he certainly has shown some strides and some growth and development while trying to be a point guard for a roster that needs a point guard. So I would agree that Zach is the most improved, but Kobe's certainly in that conversation. I think he's having a very good year overall. And especially the way lately he's kind of been more in a catch and shoot role. His shooting numbers have gone up of late. You look at a lot of those stat lines. I mean, they're really impactful, particularly as a defensive rebounder. He's a very, very good rebounder for his position. So I'm buying stock on Coby White. I think he's definitely part of this future core. And whether he's a point guard or not can be saved for another day. I don't think he is. Coaches and GMs may, and that's their prerogative. But he's certainly, to me, a piece you want to build around if you're Bulls management.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any problems with Coby White right now. I think he's not a point guard and we'll find that out. I think he could be a playmaking two guard. I think he'd be a guy who, off that catch and shoot vibe, if you start closing out too crazy, he still has the dribbling ability to get to the hole and dish it off to a finisher or an open shot. So he does. He has enough vision that you can sell some of those point guard dreams. Or if you're just trying to install that point guard, you know, mainframe onto his hard drive, whatever the case may be, and have him pull it out in certain moments in a pinch, I'm cool with that. But as far as setting up an offense and running it and making sure that the people who are hot get the ball and making sure that the people who are not don't get the ball and late, you know, time and possession situations, yeah, I don't think he's there yet. And on top of it, he's 20 years old. So there's a lot of guys who are born for that position at 20 years old who can't play it on an NBA level consistently in a winning situation. So there's a lot going against him. And on top of that, you like you said, KC, the stuff that I see that I appreciate the most, because we know he can score, and the rebounding is definitely something that, you know, he's put up a lot of sevens and eights and nines and tens in his last year and a half where you're like, okay, he's not scared. But on top of that, trying to take a charge, you know, trying to take a charge versus, you know, Steven Adams or Zion Williamson, or getting his, like, he mixes it up. So he doesn't strike me as the guy who's strictly the gunner, because we've seen those guys where you know if they're going to get you 17, 18, if they can't get you that night, they are useless. And it's just not their night to be a part of that game. And sometimes we've seen it for series, but he strikes me as the guy who's going to try his hardest to kind of affect the game. And sometimes when he was in that point guard role, it would go against him because it would be like, okay, I got to affect the game because I haven't been good. And on top of it, I got to get guys involved. And next thing you know, you're counting steps instead of dancing. So I'm with Coby White. I'm buying Coby White. Now, of course, if something attractive came along and he's an attractive piece, then you obviously have to think about that. But Coby White, you know, thumbs up, man. He's, you know, he's taken everything that the league has thrown at him, and I think he's handled it admirably. There have been no 3-week stretches or 2.5-week stretches where he has just been unplayable. There's been a couple of games where he's suffered, but it's the breaks when you're a 20-year-old player in the NBA.
Yeah. We've seen what a gunner looks like, and his name is Antonio Blakeney.
my man!
Who can see, as I've been keeping up with Devon Dotson down in the G League bubble, he's back now. Antonio Blakeney, a teammate of his with the Canton Charge, and in terms of him being that gunner, not a ton has changed. But he can really score the basketball, Antonio Blakeney.
Have you seen him throw a pass?
I've been keeping track of that for our old pal Mark Strotman. And I think he's thrown more passes than taking shots. In the G League, they don't have the same level of tracking data down there, so I can't be 100% sure, but I charted it as much as I could.
Antonio is an interesting character. I've only had a couple of instances where I had to – I actually did a couple of appearances with Bobby Portis a couple of years ago, and Antonio came along each time, and he's thrown a couple of passes. There's a couple of times where Antonio is just like, all right, guys, appreciate the freeness. I'm out here. And I'm like, all right, I'll leave $50 behind for the server. You know. So Antonio is passing things in the last couple of years, but shout out to him, and shout out to knowing that you are a gunner and never, ever changing for anybody. You know, live that dream, Antonio. Live that dream, brother.
Yeah, and the quick thing I'll say on Wendell, who was my pick, you know, has been up and down also, missed 11 games due to injury, which has been a problem for him. But he's come back, and I think, you know, Jokic and Embiid games aside, which these are leading MVP candidates, these are right, maybe the best two players in the NBA this season. These are guys that have torched in the same week as Wendell Carter Jr., Rudy Gobert, you know, a two-time defensive player of the year. Like, these are things that can get a little reacted to in a visceral way. But I think Wendell, since he's been back, has fared well enough. He still thinks he's half a step slow in terms of getting back from that quad injury. But the improvements for him, you know, the shooting has been up and down. He's technically shooting a career high percentage right now. The assists being up at around near 2.5 a game is a big development for him. Obviously he's in the, you know, deep into the school of Thad Young right now in terms of learning how to be that short role playmaker and impact, you know, the game on offense in that way. So I've definitely seen improvements to Wendell Carter Jr. You're seeing the signs of a breakout akin to what maybe I saw coming, just given that he was playing under Billy Donovan and the kinds of bigs that Billy Donovan has coached in the past. It hasn't been the full explosion that, you know, when I make a pick, like he's going to be most improved, it would be. But I've seen a fair amount out of him. And in this most recent stretch, you know, we'll see. I think the All-Star break will be good for him, or as good for him as anybody, in terms of getting back to 100%. And then we'll see what we get from him in the second half. But I don't feel terrible about that pick, even if it is technically wrong, just as you guys don't seem to feel terrible about the Kobe's pick, which
I wonder what Wendell Wendell thinks his ceiling is, because we hear a lot of Wendell was shooting the threes in the preseason in the first couple of weeks of the season, it's like, oh, he's working on it. And then you think, okay, is that the team making him work on it? Is that something that he thinks he should work on? You know, you got the Horace Grant and the Al Horford comparisons coming out of Duke. I just wonder what Wendell thinks he is, right? Or what Wendell thinks he should be. And that if it is as lofty, because he strikes me as a dude who battles with confidence at times, and you know, you could just tell from the physical action of not looking at the rim last year and, you know, being told to fire the ball out. And then this year there've been times where it's like, okay, I see it. The first 8 points or 6 points that he scored against Embiid that pissed Embiid off to go on to score 50. Like, that's the Wendell that I'm cool with, right? Like, I think Wendell kind of falls into Lowry, Zach, Kobe. We got enough guys who want to get theirs, need to get theirs. But I sometimes I wonder, and you guys are around Wendell, you know, pre-COVID, you guys are around Wendell. I wonder what he thinks he should be or what he thinks he is, and if it is either higher or lower than sometimes the people that are around him in the organization and the fan base may place him.
Yeah. Well, he talks about watching star big men, and especially the ones that are the facilitators, kind of offensive hubs, whether it be in handoffs or on the short roll or kind of picking out 3-point shooters from that pocket. He talks about learning from Thad Young. So I think he certainly sees that as fundamental to his ceiling. He certainly was getting up 3-point shots in the preseason, like a guy who was dedicated to making that work for his game. It's obviously tapered off. And I think, you know, in the games that since he's been back, he's only taken five threes. And
I mean, it's obviously been removed from his game, but I'm saying, like, I wonder if that's something Wendell was told, hey, you're going to be very valuable if you could do this, this, and this. Or if it's just like, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm not phrasing it right, but like what he thinks he should be and his game being manicured around that, as opposed to maybe what, you know, different people around him or what the coaching staff or the organization thinks he is. Like, I wonder if those things are you know, the symmetry in that is as close as it should be for a player who's trying to find his way while other dudes have already found their way and you got to guard them on a nightly basis. Like, I feel like sometimes you could watch his gears kind of moving a little bit out there, and I wonder what kind of player he wants to be.
Yeah. And that dissonance from the external probably stems from being a team first guy. Like, if a coach does tell him, like, hey, this is the way that you could be the most valuable to the team, like, he's going to go ahead and do that. He's been a pro in that regard, really, since I've been around him. We might not know exactly, but we do know. I think your thing on the confidence thing is spot on, because I think people were quick to peg that on Jim Boylan last year, of kind of discouraging him from, you know, or like on putbacks, you know, kicking out to the 3-point line and things like that. People were quick to put that on Jim specifically, but Billy Donovan has talked about that this year too, that Wendell is kind of a guy that can ebb and flow throughout a game based on his confidence. So that definitely is a legitimate point to raise. That's something Billy has talked about a lot. Let's move on. We have here, if any Bull was to finish top three in an award ballot. So interestingly, none of us put Billy Donovan for coach of the year here. That's obviously always a crowded field. And Casey, you wrote about that in a column today for NBCSportsChicago.com, that you had predicted Billy to finish top five in an award ballot, but this is top three. So we've got Jason, Casey, and Tony, again, agreed. You guys are in lockstep pretty often on these, with Patrick Williams being a top three finisher for rookie of the year. I broke from that, not because I didn't think Pat was going to have a good year, but because of kind of what's happened, where there are just going to be guys putting up counting stats on teams that are going to be either in the same tier as the Bulls or maybe a little bit below, that are probably just going to jump out ahead of them. And I think that's borne out when you look at, you know, guys like LaMelo Ball and Tyrese Haliburton specifically. I put Lowry Markkanen for most improved player here. That probably doesn't look great right now, because at this point in the season, Lowry has played 14 games. He's missed 20. You know, obviously he's averaging a career high and he's shooting career best marks from the floor in the time that he has been out there. But he's been lapped pretty markedly, I think, in the most improved player conversation when you look at some of the other breakout seasons across the league. So you guys have any regrets about Patrick Williams potentially a top three rookie of the year finisher? You think he's got a strong second half in him to break into that conversation?
I have very few regrets in my life, other than perhaps choosing this profession, but no, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. I'm completely joking. No, I don't have regrets. I agree with you. Well, first of all, I would say that, you know, LaMelo is not just, I don't think, padding stats on a bad team. I mean, I think LaMelo is the best rookie, and I thought that before the draft as well. So, and I'm pretty clear on that. I've been consistent with that. So LaMelo, to me, is going to be, you know, assuming he stays healthy, the runaway rookie of the year. That's maybe one way to dive into this, is kind of what our ballots are at the All-Star break for both rookie of the year and coach of the year. Yeah. So, yeah, I would probably put Halliburton second right now without numbers in front of me. And Patrick would be probably close to third. I don't think he would be third.
Yeah, Edwards had to slide in there at three, right? Just because of the opportunity, right? I mean,
yeah, he's made a surge. You know, Quickly is a guy, again, we don't have all the numbers in front of us. Quickly is a guy you would think about, but he hasn't quite broken into that enough of an expanded opportunity to me. But you're right, Casey. Patrick probably is in that conversation.
He's in the conversation. So he's not, if he's not third, he's not far off. And I do think he's going to make an all rookie team. So
absolutely.
Yeah. What about your guys' take on rookie? Then we can quickly do coach of the year if you want.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead, Rob.
No, I'm about in the same place on rookie of the year as you are in terms of LaMelo. I mean, he already looks special, and he was my favorite guy coming out of the draft too. Yeah. Even as a LaMelo optimist though, and he was polarizing, you know, in the pre-draft process and everything like that, even as a LaMelo optimist, I could not have seen what he's done, especially since he came into a starting role for them. I could not have seen that coming. He's just been an amazing watch on a night to night basis. Charlotte is, in terms of a league pass watcher, as fun as any team in the league. And you know, are winning and he's really, really, you know, shot the ball better than I thought he was going to, and been completely, you know, up to speed. As a guy who's been commanding and leading that offense. So even a LaMelo optimist, I'm kind of blown away by what he's done so far and the potential. I mean, from here, like we talked about this with Pat too, right? Like when these guys get a full offseason under them and a full, you know, strength and conditioning training and things like that, that's a dude that I am, if I'm the rest of the NBA, I'm terrified of when he really gets the full complement of a transition from year one to year two. He's going to be absolutely special. He's runaway favorite. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, he made 6 p.m. cool again on League Pass, right? Because, you know, if you're in the Midwest and you're waiting for your team at 7, you know, those 6 p.m. games, boy, it was a whole lot of nothing going on for a long time with the Wizards, and before the Nets became the Nets, and Charlotte was in that mix as well, and Atlanta. But nah, he's making 6 p.m. League Pass, all right. I mean, I like his style. I like his flair. You know, you saw it as a child, right? He's still a kid, but you saw it as a child. You just waiting for him to grow into his body. And now that he's doing it, because he's been playing against NBA players for the last couple of years, summers and coming back home and all that good stuff. So you're just waiting for it to figure itself out. And he's on a team where, I mean, when we saw them play the Bulls, we're like, oh, he's throwing passes to guys that don't know, you know, where they should be. Like, he's a dude who's going, when he gets around better players, he's going to look that much more premium. There's a lot of, like, if Penny Hardaway had a ridiculous amount of confidence, which Penny already did, but he wasn't like brash with it. Like everything that I see this dude do and the way he moves, he's 6'8". Like he's a legit 6'7", 6'8". And his shot isn't as big a problem as people said it would be. Yeah, I'm sold on the LaMelo Ball thing. It's going to be fun in the Eastern Conference for a long time for any point guard out there, because he's going to embarrass some people. Like he's not one of these guys that's gonna shy away from clowning you. Like there's gonna be some must see moments with that dude, and the league, like you said, Rob, the league's gonna be put on notice. This is gonna be fun to watch. This rookie class for a draft, we're like, it's a 2-player, maybe a 3-player draft. I mean, you go 11, 12 picks deep that are out here really contributing to teams, or guys are getting moved around for really young players right now. Like, okay, you can sit on this bench for a while because this young dude has to be the point guard. So I'm enjoying this draft class so far. And of course, Pat Williams, man, like you can't ask for a more mature and evolved 19-year-old, right? Like I had a chance to be around guys like Tyrus and, you know, really, really young guys who you knew, you know, sometimes the moment was too big for their maturity levels. And of course, Tyrus went on to talk about some of the things that he dealt with as a young man and still deals with to this day. But it's like guys get dropped in a new world. And this is during COVID. You get dropped in a new world, in a new city that you've never been to, in weather that you've never been around, on a league and a level that you only anticipated and thought about playing, played against rec-wise, but now you're in the show. And on top of it, you're providing real contributions to a team that's ascending. Yeah, I'm down. I'm down with the Patrick Williams thing all the way through.
Yep. And then on Coach of the Year quickly, I've got five guys. I've got one at the top, and then you could order the next four however you want to. I think Quinn Snyder is the runaway favorite in that with what he's doing with the Utah Jazz. I mean, they've just been dominant and a total revelation. So I think he's pretty clearly the front runner at this point. The rest of that top five, you know, again, order it however you want. But I would put in some order Tom Thibodeau with the Knicks, just what he's doing over there. Monty Williams, Greg Popovich, I think with San Antonio, a little bit underrated what they're doing there. And then Doc Rivers with the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think Billy is probably somewhere in there if the Bulls can sustain this over the second half of the season. But I think those five to me probably come in just ahead of him at this point.
Yeah, so I wrote this in the column today. I had Quinn Snyder, Thibodeau, and Williams, and Doc as the first four. And then, yeah, I didn't put Popovich's name, but he or Donovan would probably be in that 5-6 conversation as of right now. I mean, there's half season to go. But to me, Snyder is a runaway winner. And then, you know, second or third is either Monty or Tibbs, you know, depending on which way you want to go that with that vote. And then from there, it's Doc. And then probably the 5-6 conversation is Popovich and or Billy. So yeah, this is always one of the hardest fields, no doubt. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and sure. And with the evolving criteria too, most improved is the same way. And again, I had Lowry as a potential top three finisher for most improved. I think that there was a chance that could have borne out if the health and availability stuff, just for the numbers that he was on track to put up. And we'll see. Maybe he comes back quickly in the second half and makes a run, but that doesn't necessarily look as optimistic as it did at the beginning of the season.
Where do you, real quick, where do you have Kyrie on Coach of the Year, since he said that Steve Nash wasn't going to be coaching the team? So
I actually have Monty Williams as the guy.
His number one? Yeah.
I'm with that. Yeah, I'm with that.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, the Jazz have been kind of trending. They got
a
star, right? Quinn Snyder is a damn good coach. Got a chance to be around him when I was in Atlanta and watched him put Dennis Schroeder in the position to make the money that he's making right now, to be honest with you. So I respect Quinn. I would probably put Quinn at two for me, but Monty Williams, man, like the Phoenix Suns were supposed to be cool and cute and like an upgrade for Chris Paul over Oklahoma City. So it was supposed to be like, hey, this is like a spunky team that won't surprise us, but like we're ready for them to be good. They're the second best team in the West right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so shout out to Monty, and obviously everything that he's been through and the kind of man that he is. I root for dudes like that. So for me, it would be Monty, it would be Quinn, it would be Tibbs, because, you know, love Tibbs. Like, I don't care. Those dudes are being grinded into dust probably, but damn it, they're 500 and Julius Randle. I'd also throw in there, like you mentioned, Pop, but, you know, Ty Lue. Like, Ty Lue took over a situation that everybody was like, uh-oh, people getting ready to bail. Is the window closed? And they've got the requisite amount of talent. They're going to win a certain amount of regular season games because they have two star players. But shout out to Ty Lue, who's got that team right now with the third best record in the Western Conference. So, yeah, I don't know where he would fit in. Obviously, Billy Donovan should be in there somewhere. But I would have Monty, then Quinn, and then Tom Thibodeau.
Always a crowded field. Always.
Yeah. No. And no wrong answers. Really, when you look at those top six or seven guys. So I got two more here that we can run through quickly. They're honestly not even worth a conversation about. We had a question in yours. This is during the preseason. Remember, will Patrick Williams be starting by the end of the season? How funny that sounds as a question right now.
What were you saying? What were the answers?
So Jason, you gave a one sentence answer that was perfect. I think he should be starting now. And you were 100% in lockstep with Billy Donovan, perfectly said. Casey and I, as we are wont to do, couched ours a little bit in, we think he should probably be starting now, but I also see the other side. Maybe he shouldn't be. So we played that fence game a little bit, but basically we all said he should probably be starting as soon as possible. Casey and I both firmly predicted by midseason at the very, very latest. And obviously Pat took over in their third preseason game and has hit the ground running ever since. He missed one game, but has started, you know, every game at either the three or the four spot and has not looked like a 19-year-old doing it. We've waxed poetic about Patrick Williams on this podcast ad nauseum, and he has earned that. Another one that doesn't quite warrant that much discussion, will Zach LaVine be an all-star this season? Will he finally break through that barrier? We all said no, so we can eat our words there. I would say for the full Zach all-star discussion, we did a podcast a couple weeks ago when he was named, and we went through all the ways that Zach has not only improved on the court this season, but the ways that he's kind of earned that through his work ethic and accountability. And we went through the entire Zach experience on a podcast a few weeks ago. So I'd recommend that. Listen for that full conversation. all of our logic, to be fair to us, was basically predicated on you've got KD, you've got Drew Holiday, you've got like there was an influx of talent coming into the Eastern Conference. We didn't know then that James Harden would be in the Eastern Conference at that point, but even he's another guy in there. And it just seemed like it was tied to the record prediction, right? Where
I remember saying that.
How are you going to win that game?
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah. And they did, and that's and like we said earlier in the podcast, that's a credit to Zach. He's totally earned it, and that's one that I think we're all happy to eat our words on. But we did not think that that was going to happen this year. Here's one that I think is just kind of a funny one to just have had the question in the first place, but the sneaky non-starter that we thought would flourish under Billy Donovan, that maybe isn't a most improved candidate for the entire team, but is somebody that coming off the bench, like you might not think, but is going to have this surprise breakout year. Now the answer is a resounding Thad Young to that question, which none of us saw coming. And, you know, it's not that we didn't have respect for what Thad Young had done in the league, but to see 12-6-4.5 and have these crazy on off splits and basically be driving winning, him and Zach being the two that are really driving winning for this team. I don't think we saw that coming. Tony and I had different answers from you guys. Tony had Denzel Valentine, who he tried to argue for most improved bowl on this podcast a couple weeks ago. Denzel's had some ups and downs, but I think has been a genuine spark plug off the bench. You know, there's obviously the head scratching moments at times, but he's provided the playmaking, the ancillary playmaking, the shooting, and some rebounding and things like that in stretches. So he's had, I think, pretty solid year.
Don't forget the album.
Don't forget the album as well. Exactly. I had Tomas Satoransky, a pick I actually feel decent about. I think he's averaging 4.5 assists in 20 minutes a game. He's been a really great, you know, in spurts backcourt mate for Zach. That's unlocked a lot. You know, as with most of the bench, his on-off net rating splits are phenomenal. And he just, you know, how many games has Sato just checked in the first quarter? And him and Thad, you could say both, you could say this about both of them, have just kind of, you know, single-handedly changed the game just based on, you know, them checking in and, you know, they've really feasted on opposing bench units. Jason and Casey, you guys both agreed. And this was again, during the preseason as Chandler Hutchinson.
You don't have to make us feel better about it. Just give it to us.
They said, well, you guys said Chandler Hutchinson and he had had a strong preseason. I'm just providing the full context. But Hutch, obviously he had a bout with COVID-19 that took a lot out of him, to hear him tell it a couple weeks ago. So he missed some time at the beginning of the season, kind of phased in and out of the rotation, and has now been out, I think 13 games going into the break. And, you know, like you said, Casey, a little bit nebulous, but for personal reasons. So he has not been in the rotation as much of a mainstay as maybe it appeared he would be at the beginning of the season. But those were our picks there.
He hasn't been in the rotation at all. Let's just kind of like we see it. So we were wrong on that one. And I don't, we'll also just pause to say here, best wishes to Chandler Hutchinson. We hope whatever is plaguing you gets better, because it's a personal issue and it's keeping him out a while with no timeline for his return. So best of wishes to the former first round pick.
Yeah, this time has affected all of us differently, and to actually have the disease and then have to bounce back from it and still operate at a professional level athletically as well as personally. Yes, I can't imagine. So, wishing the best for Chandler, and you know his career is one thing, right? But life is important. So shout out to Chandler, and hopefully he gets back doing what he loves straight up.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Straight up. Absolutely. You guys said it perfectly. And then the last one, which is a great segue into something we were talking about a little bit off air that we should get into on air because it's been a hot topic of conversation amongst the Bulls fan base, especially this morning, is over under 1.5 trades by the trade deadline. Now, Jason, Casey, and Tony all said under. I said over, and my over pick was kind of just a let's get crazy with this and let's see what happens. But this front office came into the season, like we talked about, having pretty much stood pat through their first offseason together. And it's a question of kind of when does this evaluation process conclude and when do the real changes start being made? Because even for them to the Bulls to have exceeded the expectations they have in the first half of the season, as Billy Donovan said, this is still a team with a losing record. It's still a team that changes are going to need to be made at some point to get to that next level, break out of the rebuilding phase and into the contending phase. So regardless of what we predicted there, I think it's a good segue to talk about the first prominent trade rumor around this team. To basically throughout this season, with Shams Charania of The Athletic reporting that the Bulls have registered interest in Cleveland Cavaliers center Andre Drummond. So I guess, you know, either one of you guys jump in. What was your first impression kind of hearing that and kind of what Casey's pointing at Jason to go
first.
Jay, what was your impression when you hear that? How did it land with you in terms of the fit that Andre Drummond might be here or why the Bulls might be interested?
I saw it today. I was like, oh, shit. That's how you feel? Like, if Andre Drummond is in play, that means this organization thinks that they are a lot further than maybe they even thought they would be. Because Andre Drummond, and I don't know his contract situation.
He's expiring, so it'd be a rental.
So it'd be a rental, right? Yeah. So it's a taste of, okay, do you like it here? Do we like you? And maybe you – hey, let's face it, too. Thad can't guard fives for the rest of the season if you want to make any hay. And Wendell Carter Jr. is not a traditionally big five. He's a 6'9 player, somewhere around there, if I'm not mistaken. You know, you got guys 6'11, 7 feet who have the same amount of mass as Wendell who are shooting over him and looking over him. So I understand. I mean, Andre Drummond is good at a couple of things. He's good at rebounding, and he's good at being a physical presence, and he gets paid a ton of money to do so. And let's face it, this team, those losing moments in those winning games, those winnable games, have come because sometimes, just sometimes, they're not the most physical of teams, and sometimes, just sometimes. Like, how many times have we seen Thad or Otto Porter Jr. have to battle for a rebound at the end of a game and go, oh, look, that's the vet getting it done, where it's like, no, they need a physical presence in there to throw people around, you know, hard foul or two. So I get it. I get the interest. If Andre Drummond becomes a Chicago Bull, I will be blown away by it because, you know, I never would have seen this coming. I thought Andre Drummond would be a Celtic or a Net or whatever the case may be. I thought he would be on a contending squad or looking to be a part of a contending kind of vibe. But if Andre Drummond is in play, then Bulls fans, enjoy yourself. Yaha time on us because everything is out, like this. This is not where we thought we would be. I didn't. You know what I mean? Like, I got to be honest with y'all. I booked travel plans a couple of nights ago, and I'm sitting here like, should I really do it around Memorial Day? Because what if the Bulls get silly and mess around and goes, you know, 7-game series and then upset somebody? So, you know, things have changed, and they have changed so much so that we're waking up and reading that the Bulls have general interest in Andre Drummond, whereas before we're like, man, are they going to trade Lowry? Is that going to be part of this thing? What about Kobe? You know what I mean? Like, things have changed over the last month or so, and it's been very apparent. And this will be another thing. And on top of it, those two, Mark Eversley and AK, have shown you if there's a swing to take, they're going to take it, whether it be Pat Williams or Billy Donovan when he became available. So we're kind of learning the DNA and the profile of the architects of this thing as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Celtics and Nets, who are two teams he's been linked to if he does get to the buyout market. So that very well still could happen. So my take on it is this: if you're doing Otto Porter Jr. straight, and that's the point that needs to be made here. The Bulls are actually one of the few teams that have a salary where you can just make this make this work very easily. They're one of the few teams in the whole league without having all the spreadsheets in front of me, but just off top of mind. In terms of available players, obviously there's other stars that have matching salaries to Andre Drummond. But if you're telling me Otto Porter Jr. straight up for Andre Drummond, why not? Because, you know, it's clear that Otto's become unreliable. Drummond, is what he is. He's going to help you in some areas. He's not going to really help you in others. He's a turnover machine. The Bulls have been hurt by turnovers. For as good of a defensive rebounder as Drummond is, and he is that, the Bulls have not struggled with defensive rebounding. I think their percentage is second in the league, last I checked, maybe third. Mm-hmm. That's not really a huge need. The other reason, the only other stipulation, see, I would do all these as with stipulations. As long as you don't give up another asset, like I wouldn't even throw in a second round pick for him. And as long as Wendell Carter Jr. is still your starting center, and he's just here to take away the Cornette and the Felicio and the Gafford experience minutes. As long as those two things happen, particularly with Lauri Markkanen coming back from injury post All-Star break, you've got to play Markkanen, you've got to play Young, you've got to play Carter. Those three players are important to me. For Drummond to play 15 minutes, I'm cool with that as long as you don't send another asset Cleveland's way. Now, Cleveland obviously is going to ask for an asset because they can just waive him, you know, and, you know, unless they have some great designs for Otto Porter Jr. But I would not even do it for even a throwaway asset. I guess I should qualify one more time. Maybe Chandler Hutchinson, if they say we want Chandler Hutchinson, because he's really not going to be in your future plans. You're pretty thin at wingman, but this is a short-term thing, and you can readdress that in the offseason. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But as long as those stipulations are met, I wouldn't have any problem with it.
I had kind of an old man moment there. But I had kind of a visceral reaction in the negative direction to this when I first saw it, because – and I think it was really a little bit based on the anecdotal kind of fan response that I saw, which was basically, yes, we need Andre Drummond so badly to come in and be our starting center and supplant Wendell Carter Jr. and like be the savior of this team's front court, which I don't necessarily see as Andre Drummond being at this point in his career. Like you said, KC, you hit on it. Really, I think his elite skill is defensive rebounding at this point. I know there have been isolated incidents of the Bulls being, you know, late in games, struggling on the defensive glass, giving up second chance points in ways that have hurt them in individual games. But on the whole in the season, they're actually like fifth in the NBA in limiting second chance points. They're second, as you said, in defensive rebounding, right? That's not really the strongest point of weakness for this team where you need to go out of your way to address it. But the way that you lay it out in terms of those parameters, if this is a situation where he's coming off the bench, and I think he's clearly better than any reserve center option that they have at this point. If it is really an Otto Porter Jr. swap, because like you said, it gets tough, especially I was looking a little bit at because Shams had reported that the Raptors were a team that had engaged with the Cavaliers on a potential or engaged with Drummond, I should say. So there's another team on the buyout market that could potentially be a competitor in terms of a contender that needs some size and some physicality in the front court. But it just gets tough when you look at these team sheets for teams to get to his salary number in terms of without it being a 5-for-1, 4-for-1, you get into a roster spot crunch there. You get into a situation where you're just giving up too much as another team. The Bulls are a team where the auto fit is snug in terms of their salaries matching. For me, I don't know how you can count on Otto Porter Jr. coming back and being reliable for the rest of the season, even if he does. Like, it's just in a situation where you just don't know what you're going to get from him in terms of availability. So, you know, I see the logic if those parameters are all met. The question that I have, and, you know, Andre Drummond doesn't necessarily have control over this if a trade is agreed to, but the question that I would have is he going
to
be...
Why would he come here? Why would he come here to do that?
Exactly. If he has a trade, if he's traded, he has no choice. So, you know,
yeah, but obviously, but I mean, would you make it known if I can go play more with the Nets or more with, you know, another team, I'd rather do that. I wouldn't want him to come here and think that he has to back up. And then all of a sudden he's mad at that. And then it ruins whatever you got going on in that bench, in that locker room too.
For sure. A couple things to that, Jason, first of all, you know, that's why Cleveland's going to want to try to get an asset out of this, because they can just waive him and he'll go to the buyout market and maybe get a situation that's more amenable to what he wants, right? But if he's straight, he has no say. That's why Cleveland will be asking for an asset. I just wouldn't send an asset. That's just me personally. Mm-hmm. The other thing to your point is, like, I guarantee you, if this is something that gets serious or comes to fruition or what have you, I guarantee you Arturis and Eversley will have worked back channels enough to the point where they're good with all that. They're not going to bring in a poisonous situation. They value locker room chemistry too much. They're too experienced in the league to know that stuff. And they've talked about the need to, you know, build a positive player empowered vibe this season. That's all they've talked about. And they, even the other night, Arturas talked about just, you know, how everybody's on the same page and just the chemistry and the buy-in and all that stuff. So they're not going to bring a, they're not going to bring a disgruntled person into a situation like that. There's no way. So there's a lot of ifs here, and that's why it's a rumor at this right. point, 3 weeks out. But to me, if you've done all that background and Cleveland for some reason wants Otto Porter Jr. Hanging out in their training room or elsewhere for 2 months, you know, it's like, I mean, you know, why not? I mean, that's because Drummond probably gives you a little bit more, feels a little bit more of a need than Otto does at this point. And look, Otto's played well when he's been healthy, but the Bulls have also shown they don't really need him in a weird way. Like Garrett Temple's been fine at the three. Williams can toggle between the three and four. So, you know, and the backup center minutes, while at times have been okay, have more or less been choppier than probably your wing production.
Yeah. And that's why, again, the parameters that you set out, Casey, I think that's a situation where I can see the flyer. I don't see him as a guy that's going to come in and supplant. Like, I'm not saying that I'm sold on Wendell Carter Jr. or Lauri Markkanen as fixtures of the front court of the future, but I also don't think they've, you know, been negatives enough this season to rule them out either. So, and I think if you bring in a guy like Drummond to be the starter, you've kind of made that decision already, where I just, in my opinion, it's too early to make the decision on either of those guys, especially for a guy that it's really debatable outside of the defensive rebounding stuff, because he's not a tremendous finisher. You know, he's a defensive playmaking type. Like, he's always been a good steals and blocks guy, but I'm not sure fundamentally or rotationally he's necessarily a totally sound, like, difference maker defensively. So I just don't think that's enough of an upgrade to risk that potential long-term or rush that long-term decision. But if you can, you know, have the situation be amenable to him where it's that, you know, a little bit more scaled back of a role, I think it definitely helps with the load on Thad, the load on Wendell, as two guys that have been punching above their weight in terms of size, especially lately. And it just adds, you know, you can never have enough size. You can never have enough physicality, even if the Bulls have been on the whole strong as a defensive rebounding team to this point in the season. So
two more quick pros as to why to do it. Stop the 30-20 games against the Bulls. He's got like six of them that I've covered in my career. He always drops 30 and 20 on the Bulls. So there, that's another pro. And then, of course, the biggest pro is to have him match up against Tony's guy Embiid in the first round of the playoffs.
There it is. Listen, if it costs Otto Porter, I mean, Otto, it's been cool. I mean, it's been a couple of nights we've been in the same place. It was fun, but you'd have to really get used to Cleveland for the next couple of months if I had any say so. And that's, you know, that's me liking Otto. But I would like Andre Drummond to be here so that Thad doesn't have to catch elbows from Joel Embiid. You know what I mean? Like, I want healthy Thad. I want happy Thad. I don't want elbowed Thad. So yeah, I'd be down with it if that's what the cost would be. Actually, you know what? We got to do, is that it for the preseason predict? Or
yeah, there were other stuff in there, but everything's too much of a conversation. There were some in here that just weren't predictions. So I think that's all we got to hit on.
Just the meanderings of this podcast. Is that exactly. All? No doubt. Exactly. You now, Mr. Schaefer, you will be commissioned with finding some points bet all-star odds, because I feel like this is the last pod we're going to do before the all-star game, right? Is that, if I'm not mistaken, right? It's Sunday, right? Isn't it Sunday?
Yeah.
So, this is the last pod we're going to do before the All-Star game. And, you know,
I need you to stall for me while I find them.
No, yeah. That's
it's an easy one. Just, I don't know how to do the old points bet app. You know, I'm really.
Hey, I love Rob, the start of it. It's easy. No,
Let me just say this. The easy one is try to find the 3-point shootout odds, and we can chop that up because.
Zach
Levine's in that against a stacked field. Let's run down that field. Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Steph Curry, Zach LaVine, and am I missing one? Devin Mitchell.
Devin Booker.
Devin Booker, yeah. Steph Curry. Donovan Mitchell twice. What?
Yeah, the two guys that have come down to probably, Steph Curry and Devin Booker. I mean, Zach is a true jump shooter too, and I always worry about those dudes' legs in that kind of competition, right?
Like, great call.
Zach gets off the ground when he takes a shot, so –
Zach did assure us last night that he's going to place the money balls in the right spot. Last year, he had them at the top of the key, and that was an egregious strategic mistake. And now he's going to put them in the corner. So
yeah, left corner, left wing, right wing is his hot zones. And thank you to Adam and me and Stacey King and Tamara and everybody in the truck and Mark Brady for highlighting that on the broadcast last night as Stacey, Stacey pontificated about analytics and did his greatest nerd voice, which isn't far from his regular voice. So,
Rob, are we stalled enough, or do I? Because well, I have I'm one just, more I, stalling I, tactic.
Now that we're on video, I can do a whole like little ditty over here. You know what I'm saying?
No, I actually have one more stalling tactic. So, I've covered so many All-Star games, I can't remember which one this was at, but the Steph Curry Klay Thompson 3-point shootout. Yeah. I want to say it was in Brooklyn. I'm almost positive it was in Brooklyn, and it was one of the more remarkable events I've ever been at. And I'm like, this is absolutely amazing. This will never be topped. And then Zach LaVine came out for the dunk contest right after it and topped it like 10 seconds later. It was that was one of the best All-Star Saturday nights I've ever covered. I remember covering Derrick Rose winning the skills challenge his rookie year in Phoenix. So All-Star Saturday night, I got to admit, like, you know, you think I'm a stodgy curmudgeon at times, Jason, but I've kind of bought into All-Star Saturday night, which is not going to be All-Star Saturday night this year. I think the events are pretty fun, man.
Dude, All-Star Weekend and All-Star Weekend was a big deal for me as a kid. Huge deal. Like, one, whatever, NBA on NBC or TNT, they always had something leading up to it that I always loved. So I remember, I'll never forget, it was like a street ball documentary that when I first got introduced to Escalade, who became Escalade on the N1 tour, and God rest his soul, that's Mark Jackson's brother, right? So, you know, I saw that, and then it would lead into the All-Star game. Or like Bob Lanier telling me that reading is fundamental on All-Star Saturday morning and watching it all day long, right? So All-Star Weekends, you don't have to – I don't need anybody to get jazzed about All-Star Weekends. I'm still about it. Like, you get into your old ways, like, oh, another All-Star game where they don't play defense. I've never been that dude. I've always thought about, remember that time Stephon Marbury and Allen Iverson and those boys went at it in the fourth quarter and it was cool? And then we had last year's All-Star game that kind of put it back into like, oh, look at what happens when we've got a close game and all of a sudden guys get down to it. That was an iconic photo of, I believe, was it Giannis going up against LeBron, and then you had the Migos and Drake and Rihanna and everybody all on the sideline standing, Jesse Williams all on the staff, like standing up, like it had a real Rucker Park feel to it. So you don't have to, it is the best All-Star game and the best All-Star festivities in captivity. The Pro Bowl, nobody really cares about. The Home Run Derby, after the first 15 home runs, I'm like, cool, these guys can hit a ball over a fence. And the game is cool as well. But nah, man, All-Star game and All-Star weekend, I'm still all about it. I'm still a basketball fan. So, no, you don't have to be a curmudgeon to like those things. I'm still about it. And I think that Zach LaVine will have a good time. I don't know how many looks he's going to get, but he'll have a good time.
I also like how they threw the big men into the skills challenge. That's a nice new wrinkle that they've had. It was like Sabonis, and wasn't DeMarcus Cousins in it one year? I like that. That's kind of made it fun as well. So, I haven't always loved the game as much as you, it sounds like, Jason, although I like what they did to it last year. And there definitely were times where they got hot and heavy, especially down the stretch. There was one time Dwayne Wade broke Kobe's nose, or Kobe broke Dwayne Wade's nose, one of those two. It was in Orlando where the year Tibbs and the Bulls staff was coaching. I love All-Star Saturday Night. Those contests just do it for me. So yeah. Anyway. All right, Rob, have we stalled?
Well, so this is the thing, and we might have to like edit around this or do something else. Like, they don't have odds up for any All-Star.
Okay. All right. Well, guess what?
That's just a tough one to get thrown into the middle of the podcast and not.
No. I mean, we could keep it running. Hey, listen, there is no edit button. We're always recording. Shout out to PointsBet. You know, maybe you can get yourself a custom bet with the name of bet feature and find yourself some All-Star odds and put some points on something or make the game a little bit more exciting for you. I know they got the game, they got odds on the game. So yeah, shout out to PointsBet. It's the only app that we use for our gaming needs to add a little excitement to the game. Shout out to PointsBet. But Zach LaVine in the All-Star game. Kendall even mentioned it last night during the post game. Like, oh, you know, hopefully you can try to go for that MVP. And it's like the first time guys never really get that look. right? Because you got a bunch of guys out there who have been there, you know, multiple times, dozens of times. So the first time guy, I don't expect to get that look, but I do expect for when he, because it's going to be cool to see the guy that represents the team that you watch, and he's going to be introduced to the nation, and that part of it will be fun. So, and I hope he gets a breakaway or two or something to put a show on, because he is an entertainer. He is a Showtime type player, but I don't think he's going to sniff an MVP trophy in his first one.
No, I don't think he'll play enough. And like you said, probably not get a lot of shot attempts, but it's right. Still going to be a really neat night. And he's already said it best. It's going to mean the most to those around him, his family and all he keeps a pretty tight inner circle and all those people that have been with him through every step of the way.
And it sounds like he will have a contingent out there, you know, obviously abiding by all the NBA rules and regulations and everything like that. But it sounded like listening to him talk that he is going to have, you know, strong family representation there, which is a cool thing. Yeah. I don't know how to even gauge like a potential all-star MVP pick.
Luka Doncic.
You think?
Luka Doncic.
Step back three is way there, backing guys down.
Hey, Luka Doncic heard that noise that people was talking about how Damian Lillard should be starting instead of him. And y'all going to keep coming at these dudes, man. The Clippers found out last year in the bubble. Y'all going to keep coming at these dudes because they smile a lot and they got the floppy hair and they, you know, they play the European style. Nah, I think Luka, and it's Atlanta. So, you know, I think it'd be cool for the team that should have kept him, this trade rights, to get burned by him. The city, like, because the city watches Luka Doncic and goes, like, we like Trey, but that's more of what it's supposed to look like. So I'm going to go with Luka off that, because it'd be perfect basketball chaos if he got the MVP trophy in the All-Star game that he wasn't supposed to start in.
I think Joel Embiid could be even perfect chaos on this podcast if he comes out the gate firing. And there he goes. No Kyle Lowry this year to take charges for me down the stretch of the Elam ending finish. So I'll have to find something else to get nerded out.
Don't Joel Embiid talk unless Tony brings it up, okay? Because you know what? Like, this is my luck every time. Like, I say a guy like, oh, I have high expectations for him. I'm not into him yet. And then he has the MVP year that everybody's been waiting for him to have. But I listen, if Joel Embiid gets the MVP, I wouldn't be surprised, or the All-Star game. If he gets the actual MVP, not surprised at all. He is a fantastic player, and Tony Gill was right. He was right. This year, he was right. And he's probably going to be right for the rest of his career as well, because it seems like Joel Embiid is getting it, and I'm going to have to hear about it for the next 10 years or so. Or however long, you know, he stays away from the Haagen-Dazs. Shout out to Joel, though. That is really shitty to give a shout out to a guy after you extol the virtues of his game and then you mention ice cream. It's only because I'm a fellow fat guy. That's all it is. Fat guys unite. Like, I know what Joel is going through. I know he can be so much greater if he just stopped doing the fat guy things. And he did this year, and he's an MVP candidate. Maybe Joel Embiid. Maybe this whole time I've been fighting my inner Joel Embiid. That's what it's been. Management Tony has been propelling me forward to be more like Joel Embiid. See?
What is beyond off the rails to describe where we've gotten on this podcast right now? Shout out to everyone watching along with us this time. You can see it devolve real time. That's it's got to be a new experience for people. So I hope that you can.
We can have like a rail meter, and it just goes, you like five Jason faces, and like when it gets to Jason, like Jason level 3, we start to be like, oh shit, here it
goes. He said Haagen-Dazs. It's we're coming up on something.
Because you know when it happens too. Like, I'm looking at KC when it's happening. KC's always like, KC seems like intrigued, but it's like, he's intrigued, like, oh, my God, where is this going? But I see, like, keep going in KC's eyes. So, you know, I blame my all this.
Right? My fault now. I get it. Sorry.
Wrap this puppy up, Rob. What else we got to talk about? Is that
when
it?
When did I become the host? That's what I wanted.
Evan, when you said, hey, we should do bold predictions, I took the pod off. As soon as I heard that, I was like, I don't need to come with anything except for reactions and to, you know, be the accompaniment to these two geniuses. So
I think an hour is plenty.
I think it is.
And this is the part where I ask if you guys have any parting shots, any last thoughts for our listeners and now viewers out there, because I'm fresh out.
Enjoy your All-Star break.
Yeah, enjoy your All-Star break, and shout out to our YouTube, our new YouTube viewers. Make sure, are they subscribing and doing all the things that YouTube people have to do, Tony? Like, share this, subscribe to it, hang out with us. We appreciate you. And now all the people that hear this can actually watch it now, because I know I watch a lot of pods that are audio pods, but I like to see the interaction between the people who are actually doing it. So if you want to do that, jump on over to YouTube. We appreciate you. Tony, how else did we package this thing so that people understand where they should be? Or is Tony in a meeting right now? Is Tony right now listening and talking to a more important podcast on the NBC Sports Chicago network of podcasts? We'll find out here in 2 seconds. 2, 1.
I think you guys got it done.
There it is. All right.
And hopefully one day soon we can do it in person. That's
yeah, man. Yeah, looking forward to it. I got vaccinated a couple of days ago. Well, yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got vaccinated yesterday. And the family is getting it as well. And that's what it is. So, yeah. As always, for Rob Schaefer, Casey Johnson, Tony Gill, and the rest of this consortium, I'm Jason Goff. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Take care of each other and be safe. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and your smart speakers out there, as well as YouTube. Now, subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us, because you know you love us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. And as always, take care of each other and be safe.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.